Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection, and a very special Capital Connection this week as we remember the life of former three-term New York Governor Mario Cuomo, who died on January 1st at the age of 82, just hours after his son and current Governor Andrew Cuomo's inauguration. Hi, I'm David Giustina, here with political scientist, commentator, SUNY professor emeritus, WAMC's CEO and Capital Connection host, and Cuomo's sparring partner on this program and the program Me and Mario for over 18 years. And we welcome, of course, Alan Chartok.
Well, David, I don't know. I just absolutely feel like I've been punched in the gut. This was obviously something I'd been talking to the family. Things were happening. We knew that Governor Cuomo wasn't in great shape. But when they come, it's as if all the memories come rolling right back. And you begin to remember all of these various times when you had such incredible conversations. You have no idea the mail I'm getting about the people who say again and again that everything they knew about the governor came from that radio show. They would hear it in New York City. They would hear it in Boston. They would hear it here. And all I know is I was a very fortunate young man to have been allowed to do that.
Let's start there, Alan. And I'm going to start by mentioning a word or a phrase and get your reaction.
Sure.
I guess this all came together, and I mention, of course, and so many know that you're a columnist, with the column Meet Governor Koch.
That's right. I was writing a column for the Berkshire Eagle at the time. And, you know, here was this upstart, Mario Cuomo. I didn't know Mario Cuomo from a hole in the wall. And here was Koch, Mr. How am I doing? You know, going around and being the quintessential New York mayor, always on the late night talk shows and everything else. So I wrote a column, and the headline that they put on it was Meet Governor Koch, because how could he lose? Mario Cuomo told me on several occasions that he took that column, Meet Governor Koch, and he put it in his top drawer just to torment you, Chartok. So Meet Governor Koch is how it all started. And I figured, well, I was done for. Here I was, a neo-pundit and a college professor, and I was sure that I would never be allowed to talk to Mario Cuomo. And what happened? One day, Steve Morello, one of his press secretaries, calls up and says, I'd like to talk to you down here. Now, of course, in retrospect, I realized the whole thing was a setup. But at the time, I didn't know it. So I went down and I sat in his office with him and I began to tell him my tale of woe, and the phone rang and he said, guess who's here with me, Governor? Alan Chartok. Oh, he wants to see you. Go right in. So I go right in and my knees are shaking. And we sit down and he says to me, so he says, when can I be on your radio show? See, this is a guy who never gave up on anyone. You know, if somebody was out doing something that he didn't like, that was somebody to be captured. That wasn't somebody to be shunned. There are more contemporary politicians who do that, but not Governor Cuomo. And so I said, okay, well, when do you want to be on? He said, well, how about every week? And that's how it started. 18 years later, we were done.
And it was that conversation, his intellect combined with you, stopping him short just when he might have been, well, going a little more esoteric than some liked. And there were certain things that came out of your discussions, people's names like A.J. Parkinson.
Yeah. Well, A.J. Parkinson got very famous. Here's why. Because over the governor's press office, there was a sign and it said, reason with them, it makes them crazy. I love that. Reason with him and makes him crazy. And of course, everybody knows the name of A.J. Parkinson, don't you? No, you don't. You know Parkinson's Law, but there was no A.J. Parkinson. He made it up. He made up A.J. Parkinson. It was great. And so I think a New York Times reporter or somebody went and did the research and found that there was no A.J. Parkinson. And he had such a ball with that because he had fooled people. So reason with them, it makes them crazy. And if anything that Mario Cuomo knew about, that was it. Because he would call up the reporter from the Watertown alternative paper and he would talk to him in the middle of the night. And they were on the phone with the governor of New York State. Let me tell you, David, one time the phone rang at our house, and the governor was angry because I had asked him a question that embarrassed him. And how could you? Yeah. I'm listening. I got to bed at 7:30 at night because I'm up at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's 12 o'clock at night. He's giving me a hard time. My wife is lying in bed next to me saying, what is going on? She doesn't know who's on the phone. And I say, can I say something? And he said, no, you've said enough. I hadn't said a single word and hung up the phone. My wife turned around to me and said, who was that? I said, the governor. She says, you're too much.
You know, the reason with them that makes them crazy really spawned his sort of new phrase for how he practiced, at least in the way he spoke about his politics, progressive pragmatism.
Yeah, it was great. Progressive pragmatism was his philosophy. And he would articulate it on the show and in other places. And it meant you could be progressive, but you also had to be pragmatic. And if some people thought that when he raised some of the fees in New York State government in order to balance the budget, that was progressive pragmatism.
And perhaps it was a little of that that was inspired in his, of course, now famous 1984 speech to the Democratic National Convention in San Francisco. Walter Mondale, the candidate, but it seemed like Cuomo overshadowed him with this speech. Reagan is in power, and this is just a year into his term, and he is there on the stage. And let's listen just to a little bit of what he said.
A shining city is perhaps all the president sees from the portico of the White House and the veranda of his ranch, where everyone seems to be doing well. But there's another city. There's another part to the shining city. The part where some people can't pay their mortgages, and most young people can't afford one. Where students can't afford the education they need, and middle-class parents watch the dreams they hold for their children evaporate. In this part of the city, there are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. Even worse, there are elderly people who tremble in the basements of the houses there. And there are people who sleep in the city's streets, in the gutter, where the glitter doesn't show. There are ghettos where thousands of young people without a job or an education give their lives away to drug dealers every day. There is despair, Mr. President, in the faces that you don't see, in the places that you don't visit, in your shining city. In fact, Mr. President, this is a nation. Mr. President, you ought to know that this nation is more a tale of two cities than it is just a shining city on a hill.
As he walked off the podium, Walter Cronkite was heard to say that he would be the next presidential candidate. The lights were dimmed, by the way. It didn't always happen when a speech was given, but the lights were dimmed. The audience knew something special was going to happen, and it sure did happen. It was a wonderful moment.
But of course, he was pushed by his party to be president twice and ended up with labels like Hamlet on the Hudson because he didn't make the decision to do it.
The number one question that I'm asked after all my years with Mario Cuomo on the air was, why didn't he run for president? And I have no idea whatsoever. He always said it was because the Republicans weren't letting him have his budget on time. And I thought that was nonsense. But whatever his reasons were, he didn't run. At one point, he actually had a plane with the propellers running ready to take him to New Hampshire to get into the race. And I was invited to be on the Today Show. And I was on the Today Show. And the head guy, whoever the anchor, said to me, so is he running? I said, of course he's running. Why would he have a plane? Probably my worst memory of all.
Well, of course, there are more memories, and we're going to share them with you, including more clips. We're speaking to Alan Chartok. This is the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina, producer of the program. And we're reliving some memories from the program that went for over 18 years with the former governor of New York, who died on January 1st this year of heart failure at the age of 82. There are other speeches as well at Notre Dame on the abortion.
Huge.
And his Catholicism weighed heavily in all of this.
That was a huge speech in which he talked about his own personal faith. He said, basically, I wasn't going to subject other people to my faith. And it was very well received. Of course, there were some clergy who said very bad things about him. I remember once the New York Post, in a very hurtful headline, they quoted a clergyman from New York State who said, you'll burn in hell, DeMario. So he had a tremendous courage. He was, by the way, I believe, a very religious man, that he had a sense of religiosity, but he wasn't going to let anybody push him around in terms of what he thought.
And perhaps one issue stood out more than any other, which was the death penalty. And here's a bit of a conversation you had with him about that.
Is a death penalty anything more than a travesty or a parody? I mean, does a death penalty make you safe? Why is Grasso even in the New York Post pleading this week, let me die, and if I were free, I would never kill another person, not because I've changed, but because I would hate the idea of coming back to face life in prison? Well, that's what we've been saying over and over. Are you really going to tell us now that the death penalty will make us safe, when in 5 of the 7 states that have brought it back, the home is selling faster than here?
Of course, that was a case he was referring to about Grasso, who was a man who killed Leslie Holtz in Staten Island.
And who said, kill me, because I don't want to have life in prison.
Right. So the death penalty, I mean, everywhere he go, he faced this question.
I think in the 4th try for the governorship, when he was beaten by George Pataki, I think the death penalty hurt him. I think the other reason he was beaten, just so everybody knows my thinking on this, is that it was a Republican year, like one of those Republican years we just went through. And Democrats were falling like flies all over the country, and he was one. But otherwise, he would have been a 4th-term governor of New York State.
The other question that came later was the Supreme Court. Which, of course, didn't happen. And the thing that you mentioned right off the bat when it was first announced that he died is how funny he was. And when you asked him about the Supreme Court, here's the kind of answer he would give.
Don't you remember Satchel Paige?
Yeah, Satchel Paige.
Don't look back, they may be gaining on you.
And there it is.
Yeah, but you know, it's an interesting story. Recently, George Stephanopoulos wrote a book in which he said that the Clintons had offered the Supreme Court to Cuomo and he turned it down, and it was all arranged. Well, Cuomo said to me in a personal conversation that Clinton was not going to put him on the Supreme Court. And shortly after he said that to me, he sent a letter to the president saying, please take me out of consideration. He was basically telling me it was all baloney. Stephanopoulos now, Cuomo used to call it post hoc propter hoc, after the fact, announces that he was going to get it. But I've never believed it. And certainly, according to Cuomo, he didn't believe it either.
And yet he probably would have made one of the best Supreme Court justices of all time.
Oh, boy, because he was a real thinker. He could parse any argument on both sides. He was just a brilliant, brilliant man.
Let's stick with some humor for a minute and go to that day that he lost. He came over to the station, and maybe before we go to the clip, you could describe what happened when you got word and some of the people that were afraid on the street when the governor came over.
Well, a couple of things happened. The first thing was that he had said that he would not come over. We were having a fun drive, so the fun drive room was filled. People were anticipating his coming, but with no reason. My wife, the wonderful Roselle, said that she was coming over because she knew he would come. And sure enough, with 15 minutes to go before the show, it was announced that he was coming over. Well, I went out in front to greet him, and there was Major Marty, the late Major Marty of the detail who took care of the governor. And I said, where's the governor? He said, well, he's decided that since he isn't going to be governor anymore, he has to learn how to drive himself. So sure enough, 2 seconds later, screech across the street. There's the governor. A woman on the detail, Mary, I believe, got out of the car. She was white-faced. He got out, he came in, everybody in the room, there were 19 volunteers and many more staff, and everybody stood up, and the tears were coming down everybody's face, and he put everybody at ease by saying, who do you think I am, Alphonse D'Amato, who had been the big winner in this thing by putting up his guy, Pataki, and he sat down, and we had this conversation. The conversation lasted for half an hour. It was going to be a Capital Connection program, but it was the most poignant, beautiful reflection that I have ever heard anybody do in my whole life. And when he got up, he did something he had never done before. He hugged me. And then he walked out of the room. I came back and I said, okay, if you want Governor Cuomo's valedictory, call now. And this silence in the room. Then at one end of the room, one phone. At the other end of the room, another phone. And then every phone goes off for 7 hours. And the fun drive is over. And people were calling in and they were saying, how stupid can the voters be? What a wonderful man, da-da-da-da-da, over and over, 7 hours. hours. Nobody could get up, not only in the room, the 19 volunteers, but all the phones in the rest of the building were going off. And so that's how it happened.
We were there together. It was one of the amazing experiences.
And I have to say, we've been there together on all of it, David. You have been the producer of that program. I don't think people understand what the producer does, but you put it all together. You made all the arrangements. You made sure it would happen. And he probably talked to you more than he talked to me when he was setting things up, his wonderful secretary. And he had, when we did Me and Mario, the program changed to Me and Mario later. He had what's called an ISDN on his desk, which meant his voice would sound like we're in the same room. And most people always thought we were, but he was down in New York. I was up here.
Let's hear a couple of more clips now, and I want you to react to them. Now, this is, again, from the last show, and just to give you, again, the style, the sound, and the humor that he uses, he particularly liked to poke fun at you a little bit.
Yeah, I have a problem here, Alan. Yeah. We ought to talk about this.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, everybody teases, what is your legacy, right?
Yeah.
What legacy do I have? Shaw Talk Show is my legacy. What my legacy?
You know.
But I was thinking, wait, when Governor Jim Florio called me yesterday. He said, so, Mario, what's to be here? I said, I think finally I'm going to have a legacy. January 1, I don't have a place to live yet. I don't have a job. I'm going to be the first homeless, unemployed, former 12-year governor in the history of the state. By January 9th, I can picture myself all huddled, freezing on a cold pavement, you know, chilling my tush, telling some guy with a 7-day growth of beard, I don't want to go to your lousy shelter. I can just...
Maybe Andrew would take you in.
Andrew would take me in. He's in Washington. He's in tough shape, too.
He is extraordinary in terms of his humor. He could do any dialect. He could make any joke. He was just hysterical. And I remember once he said that he had talked to his dog, Ginger. And he said, I talked to Ginger about you, Shatak. And Ginger says, you're a fire hydrant with a necktie. Well, people were making papier-mâché fire hydrants with a necktie on them, and it was pretty funny.
Also, on that special day, that last day, I know you referred to Roselle a number of times, but there was this about the two of you.
The lovely Roselle, who is sitting right over there, as a matter of fact, picked these wedding bands out. They cost $8 on McDougal Street, Governor.
Excuse me, I don't want the story of your life. I asked a very simple question. Yeah. Why is it silver? Mine is gold, as you can see. Why is yours silver?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Roselle. She'd have to come over here and tell you.
Can I tell you something? I don't want to start trouble. Silver is cheaper.
I just said $8.
$8.
$8. And see these little strands between them? Uh-huh. That meant that we should be together, but there should be plenty of breathing room between us.
Uh-huh, a modern marriage. Yeah, very
not
nice.
Not that modern.
No? You notice mine, no strand?
Oh, boy.
So there you go. Well, we don't have very much time, but I wanted to end, I think, with perhaps the thing that, not only for me personally, but I think for all of us about Mario Cuomo that came out in the sound of his voice and in everything he brought to what this country stands for, and that's his ethnicity. Being an Italian-American, the first Italian-American governor of New York State, as I've told you, coming from an Italian family, sitting there with my father, watching that speech in 84, that wet glisten in the eye that I'd never seen before, but the idea that he articulated the middle class and those that were afflicted, and we should take care of them. And nothing really captured some of this stuff more than those stories he told on those fun drives that we did, including Ginger that you referenced. And
Ginger is dying, and every dog owner cried.
And Immacolata Cuomo, and
the
story of Mother. And I thought maybe we could end our program today, Alan, with Papa and the Pine Tree.
Tired, very tired, feeling the many months of struggle. Last night I went up to the den to make some notes. I was looking for a pencil, rummaging through some papers in the back of my desk drawer where things accumulate for years, when I turned up one of Papa's old business cards, the ones we made up for him that he was so proud of. Andrea Cuomo, Italian-American Groceries, Fine Imported Products. That was the card. Papa, frankly, never had any occasion to give anyone a calling card, but he loved having them around. He put one in a little gold frame on a red velvet background on the nightstand near his bed. Mama has one of them now, framed like Papa's, on display in a prominent place in her old china closet. I couldn't help wondering what Papa would have said if I had told him I was tired, or God forbid that I was discouraged. Then I thought for a few minutes about how he dealt with hard circumstances. 1,000 different pictures flashed through my mind. He was so used to dealing with hard circumstances. Almost everything he had to do was hard. But one scene in particular came sharply into view. We had just moved from South Jamaica into Hollis Wood. We had left the place behind the store and for the first time had our own house. It even had some land around it, even some trees. One in particular was a great blue spruce that must have been 40 feet high. It was beautiful. Hollis Wood was hilly. Our house sat 10 or 15 feet above the road itself, and the blue spruce stood majestically like a sentinel at the corner of our property where the street made a turn, bending around our property line. Less than a week after we moved in, there was a terrible storm. We came home from the store that night to find the great blue spruce pulled almost totally out of the ground and flung forward, its mighty nose bent in the asphalt of the street. My brother Frankie and I knew nothing about trees. We could climb poles all day. We were great at fire escapes. We could scale fences with barbed wire at the top, but we knew nothing about trees. When we saw our spruce defeated, its cheek on the canvas, our hearts sank. But not Papa's. We stood in the street looking down at the tree. The rain was falling. We waited a couple of minutes figuring things out, and then Papa announced, "Okay, we're going to push him up." "What are you talking about, Papa? The roots are out of the ground." "Shut up. We're going to push him up. He's going to grow again." We didn't know what to say to him. You couldn't say no to him, not just because you were his son, but because he was so sure. So we followed him into the house, and we got what rope there was, and we tied the rope around the tip of the tree that lay in the asphalt, and he stood up by the house with me pulling on the rope, and Frankie in the street, in the rain, helping to push up the great blue spruce. In no time at all, we had it standing up straight again. With the rain now falling even harder, Papa dug away at the place where the roots were, making a muddy hole wider and wider as the tree sank lower and lower towards security. Then we shoveled mud over the roots and moved boulders to the base of the tree to keep it in place. Papa drove stakes into the ground, tied rope from the trunk to the stakes, and maybe 2 hours later, soaked, we looked at the spruce, the crippled spruce made straight by ropes, and said, did Papa, "Don't worry, he's gonna grow again." I looked at the card and I wanted to cry. If you were to drive past the house today in Hollis Wood, you would see that great, straight blue spruce, maybe now 60 feet tall, pointing straight up to the heavens, pretending it never had its nose in the asphalt. I put Papa's card back in the drawer. I closed it with a vengeance. I couldn't wait to get back into the campaign.
Boy, what a way to end the show, Alan. Thank you so much for sitting with us. This has been a special Capital Connection on the life of Mario M. Cuomo, who died on January 1st at the age of 82. Alan Chartok has been with us. We appreciate all of you who have been tuning in, and you can always go to wamc.org to listen again.
As always, David, I'm grateful to you for all you do.
And for all you've done for this radio station and in your conversations with Governor Cuomo, we thank you, Alan.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. We'll be right back.